Blog Talk Radio.
Trouble, Lord, you know. Every life has
Darryl, are you there?
Yes, I am. I was trying to reach, and you are there. All right, Mr. Crenshaw. How are you this evening?
I'm fine.
Great. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, listeners. This is Darryl Clark, and you're at the right place at the right time. And you know you are here live because you're hearing it live. You got a little sneak preview of our guest for tonight, but I'm going to go ahead with my monologue anyway. This is Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out we bring you news and information that's, well, we like to say gathered from around the country, around the world, these United States especially. And it's news that you can use. News that's intended to inspire you and encourage you, of course to empower you, and hopefully to instill you to take some action and get involved. You see, it's news we say you can use. And so with that, this evening, we have a special guest, and all of our guests are special, but this evening makes it a little extra special because it's a friend, a colleague, I like to even say a mentor of mine. Over the years, has truly been a friend and a partner of Progressive News Weekly, and I really love this guest for a reason because, like myself, I like to just bring it straight, no chaser, as the term goes. In other words, just bringing it right from the hip, with information that truly can be researched, can be followed up on, to validate, and this evening will be no exception. As we bring you information this evening related to the current times, this day, America, in many respects, was in mourning over its 41st American president, and I'm referring to George H.W. Bush, the elder fellow, as I refer to him as. And he was laid to rest today. So there's much perspective about the life and legacy of H.W. Bush, and we'll do a little reflecting on that. I typically don't, and from time to time, I do like to put a perspective on it and give you, the listener, an opportunity to weigh in on your opinions, as so often you do not have that opportunity. So here's one this evening. I encourage you to dial in and join in this discourse. The number is 347-838-9142 if you'd like to participate in this dialogue. Certainly welcome you and encourage you to do so. There may be some topics that you agree with and there may be some you don't agree with. But one thing is for sure, your opinion is valuable. And so we look forward to that. Before we go with our special guest this evening, I'd like to just give you the opportunity, if you're not already on our mail list, to do so, and just simply drop me an email to Darryl, that's D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore C-L-A-1-8, at msn.com. And I'll be sure to add you to our mail list. You can also use that email to drop me a line and let me know what you think about our programming. And if you are aware of any topic and or guest that would truly enlighten the masses that may not typically have an opportunity to do so otherwise, especially. And if they have been given an opportunity, perhaps it's been shortchanged or maybe even skewed by political or business interest, as I've seen from time to time. And so with that said, I last week shared a little bit of a perspective that I had with regard to news and information and being aware. And I'm going to pick up on that a little bit, which I believe will segue excellently into the topic and conversation with our guest this evening. I was mentioning being aware. And in mentioning being aware, I was referring to the commercialism. This season of joy and celebration for many cultures and races, that season of spirituality with many, especially religions, celebrating a time of joy and birth. Too often, it has become a time of commercialism, a time when those who would capitalize on either the celebration and or mourning or open-heartedness of others. So I'd just like to put that and underscore that warning out, folks, especially now. And this is something that takes place throughout the year. But beware. Be very aware. And I'm referring to, the commercialism that has seemed to take hold during this time of year. And it really, really takes hold, especially beginning in October when you have that Halloween celebration. And then it goes into, which by the way is one of the most celebrated holidays of the year. Many people don't realize. They think, typically Christmas or 4th of July or Thanksgiving, but Halloween is one of the most celebrated holidays of the entire year. Look it up, folks. But anyway, it starts there and it goes into Thanksgiving and then it goes into, of course, Hanukkah and Christmas and Kwanzaa and, well, not so much Kwanzaa because Kwanzaa is typically depicted as not to be so commercialized. But Christmas and then, of course, the New Year. And let me back up a little bit because some cases, Kwanzaa is capitalized with commercialism. We have to be careful of that because that's clearly not its intent. But then you go into Valentine's Day. So it's a season of commercialism, and we have to be very, very careful. I'm not saying don't celebrate, because I do believe that we should celebrate life in every opportunity that we can. But let's not lead with that. Let's lead with the passion. Let's lead with the intangibles of love and joy and concern for one another. And then, if we're able to, follow up with some of that materialism. And I mean that. I don't poo-poo or bash materialism in its entirety. And I don't have a problem, and this is me, of course, and who am I to say? Well, I know who I am, so I'm going to continue with this dialogue. If you have a means, well, I believe it's okay to have nice clothes and feel good about yourself. But that shouldn't be the lead. That shouldn't be what represents who your core and your spirituality is. That spirituality should be led with something that emits from the inside. Simply speaking, my opinion, if you have one, please dial 347-838-9142. Press the 1 on your dial. I'd love to hear your perspective on this topic. Now, with that, I want to say, I watched, and if you heard this last week, well, this is your opportunity to comment on it. I watched the tree lighting ceremony that takes place every year on an annual basis, which has just become so politicized and commercialized that it's ad nauseum. But I watched it because one of, I believe, the most talented entertainers on the planet was to perform, and that was Diana Ross. And so I tuned in, and of course they saved her until the last 10 or 12 minutes, I believe. And she just tore the show up. I mean, she basically, for anybody that was on before her, set the tone on what the real deal is in entertainment, not even to be comparable. And the ever before. But I look back on that two-hour wait to hear her, and I began to track, as I've done many years ago. Numbers have always been one of my things, as I even went to school for. And I began to just do some statistics on the commercials. And so I did a count, because about 6 years ago, right on this program, I relayed the results of this same empirical study. And it was a study of how many commercials, typically on average, do we see in between program breaks. And at that time, it was an average of 6 or 7. And depending on the program, if it was a special program like Super Bowl or tree lighting ceremony, you might get 8. Well, this particular evening, I did my count, and I averaged 10 commercials. That's an average, folks, meaning it may have been 9 in some occasions and 11 on others. 10 commercials. That means 10 companies programming into your brain what they want to program into your brain, regardless of what you want to see. It's nice to have the mute button. Praise God for that. We should have an audio and video mute button. So the only problem with the video, we wouldn't know when the show comes back on. So I want you to think about that, folks. 11 intrusions on your brain within a 5-minute span. Now let's multiply that out over an hour program, and this was a 2-hour program. So if you have, let's say, 4 commercial breaks, 5 minutes each, 5 to 7 minutes, that's anywhere between 20 and almost 30 minutes, folks. That means that if you want to watch an hour program, whatever it is, I don't do much television surfing, so I can't, off the top of my head, even give you an example. But in the case of the tree lighting ceremony, a 2-hour program, 20 minutes each, that's 40 minutes over 2 hours, 40 to 45 minutes. We are approaching, when we watch a television program, almost half of the time you're watching commercials. Now imagine if there's some subliminal activity going on. If you don't know what that is, we're talking about something that is influencing you on a subconscious level. And there are books out there. I'm not going to get into that. That's another program. Program. I'm using that term loosely tonight, huh? That's something that we should be careful of. We need to be aware. It's so critical. We have to be aware of how we're being influenced, folks. And we have some authority. We have some control. But we have to collectively take this. That's why I repeatedly tell you, when you go to the grocery store, read the label. Don't buy if it has high fructose corn syrup in it. Put it back on the shelf. There's enough out there that doesn't have it now. Call that toll-free number on the back and say, why do you put high fructose corn syrup? And we know that it creates diabetes. Why do you put that in your products? I know it's less expensive, but do you not care about your consumers? Make a phone call, folks. Do it. It's okay. Canola oil. Where does it come from? I've never heard of a canola. Can you please explain? Because I don't buy products with canola oil in it. I know it's cheap and inexpensive to produce, but don't you care about your consumers? Let's make it happen, folks. Genetically modified food? Why do you put that in your products when there's so much research that says it's harmful? Do you not care about your consumers? Folks, let's let this be a year of awareness, but let's not stop with being aware. Let's move into action. There are people that really don't care. All they care about is the bottom line dollar. And it's time, folks. We have to do this, especially us, as I would like to say, old heads, because our children have been totally, totally, abusively indoctrinated. And this is across races and cultures. And from my empirical study, the African-American culture and race and nationality have been disproportionately influenced. So with that said, let's move into our special guest this evening. I hope he is still with us, and I hope I've got him fired up to go. I don't need to fire this guest up, though. He's always ready to speak truth. So with that said, I want to introduce our special guest this evening, Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. Mr. Ronald Crenshaw is historian, activist for human and equal rights, a research analyst, and he's been inspired, I'm going to say. Inspired, I like that. By the likes of someone that I have a great deal of respect for and too often is underrated, and that's Paul Robeson. And that's one of Mr. Crenshaw's admirable individuals that he has always looked up to. So we're going to bring Mr. Crenshaw on, but I want you to be aware as we go into this, we're well into this sugar season, be careful taking in too much sugars, because I wanted to also give a health piece. Don't forget meditation. And by the way, I'm going to be doing a special meditation coming up next year, a meditation session. It's going to be held. It's going to be somewhat unique. It's going to be called Rock the Meditation, tying in music with meditation, but a different genre, the genre of rock, the likes of Jimi Hendrix or Pink Floyd and some of those. Because, you see, all of that music is not just to jangle your brain. And so I'm going to be doing a piece. You'll be hearing more about this, Rock the Meditation, featuring Daryl Clark. It's time. I know my listeners have been telling me, Daryl, it's time for you to step out and do the things that you've been blessed with. And so I'll be doing that on the 14th of January. The advertisers will be coming out soon. You'll be hearing much more about it. Rock the Meditation. It'll be held at a music school in central New Jersey, who graced me with being allowed to utilize their facilities there. So it's going to be something unique, different, to empower you and enhance your self-awareness going into the new year. Now, with that said, my health piece behind me, and we'll do this every program so that you can have some heads up on self-empowerment for your well-being, that meditation is so critical, folks. If you don't take but 5 minutes a day, you must do it. Wifey, girlfriend, friends, siblings, all that aside, if you came here alone and you're leaving alone, it's just the way it is. So you need to take that alone time and just get still. I'm not going to give you a meditation session right now over the phone, which we've done many, 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 many times with one of my mentors, Dr. Glenn Mendoza, Master Glenn, a true meditation expert, taught me much of my skills. But just get still. Get quiet and listen to your breath. Slow and deep. Inhale and exhale. And just think about the most pleasant thought that you can. Clear your head. Clear the garbage out. We'll talk more in the future weeks about this. So now, today, this evening, we're going to have a talk with, as I said, someone that I have a great deal of respect for about climate, certainly our social climate of what's going on, and from the perspective of being aware. That's our key word this evening, being consciously aware. But we don't stop there. What do we do with the awareness? We take action for self-sustainability, self-preservation, and self-enlightenment. So, Mr. Ronald Crenshaw, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing me on. I appreciate it very much. And I hope I can present something that people will understand and I don't get too esoteric or anything like that. I want to be plain and simple, and I'd like to just talk about what's been going on politically with the U.S., and I guess that's the synthesis of what I have to say. And in particular, I guess I want to talk about the current funeral that we've just had with for Bush, the father Bush, I guess I should say. The ceremony and all of that, and how he's been praised. And I guess that has to happen in that manner because of the fact that that's what the country, the leadership of the country is about. And that's why it's so important for them to stress this so that people will, you know, more and more appreciate their position around what each president has to do. I'm trying to think of how I should start this off. Well, I guess with Bush, the father, George Bush, has been praised a lot, but there's another side of all of this, and that other side is the matter of how the U.S. dominates the world. And I guess we would start at the situation between Panama and the United States. And there was a little journal put out titled, I think it was called The Panama Deception. Yes, that goes back to, I guess, early 90s, you know, because I think he came in office, I think it's in the early 90s. Yeah, in other words, he, I think, is followed by Clinton, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, what happens?
89 to 90 before the president.
Sure.
So you're right. 89 to 93.
You have something.
I just said 89 to 93.
He was the president.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're right.
Okay.
You're right. Early 90s.
Yes. Right. Okay. And what happens is that there's a falling out between Bush and with Panama because Bush was having a little difficulty trying to overthrow the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, and he presses upon Noriega. This has all been on, let me say this in all truthfulness, this has also been on Democracy Now!, which is something that everyone can get on the internet with democracynow.org, ORG. And these are past programs also that have been recently put on when after Bush's death, George H.W. Bush. Anyway, to follow up this, what happens between him and Panama is that Noriega refuses to use his military, which is police, to help overthrow the Sandinistas because they're a communist political, communistly politically slanted, and they wanted to turn their country into a socialist government. And the United States didn't want that at all. So that's the entanglement. And they felt that they could use him because he had been drug smuggling for the United States and, you know, disseminating it wherever it was necessary. And most of that, some of that came to the U.S. and also the West Indies. Anyway, there was a falling out for some reason I don't understand. He, Noriega, didn't want to put his troops into the war with the Sandinistas, who were the Marxists. So, therefore, they had to punish him. And they, they made an attack on one of the neighborhoods, which is principally what you might say blacks, the poor area, but they bombed that because they felt that they would have the closest connection with Noriega, and they killed a lot of people, innocent people that had nothing to do with any drug smuggling or anything. So this is the things that are kept out of the news because it's, you know, not supposed to be legal to do things of this nature. I just wanted to bring that in because that's what part of that had occurred, to show how, you know, a president says something and something else is going on that the press is not telling the people. And we go on from there to George Bush and the rest of the things that he has done also, because it didn't stop there. It went further. They eventually overthrew the Sandinistas because they had, you know, they had these institutions that would help the people, but, you know, they would help them for the factor of maintaining the social order as being a capitalist, what should I say, a capitalist underdog or something like that, to keep the people suppressed. That was one of the big things that took place. I'm trying to think of the rest of the stuff that he went on into. It skips my mind right this minute for some reason. I'm very sorry to say that because I wanted to really, you know, give more information because there's much more to be said here on Daddy Bush. And it's a matter that I'm saying this in relationship to George Bush Sr. However, it's not something peculiar to the president. It's something peculiar to the nature of capitalism itself. And I say that because in each area of time, this has gone on. I mean, we can jump back to what starts the Vietnam War? That's Johnson, President Johnson, and Kennedy, and things of that sort, where Kennedy didn't want to get involved too much into the war with, oh boy, here we go again. My she was, oh, Vietnam. That's it. That's a big one. I shouldn't, you know, forget that. But anyway, Kennedy wasn't, Kennedy started out, first of all, and eliminating the training camps for Cuba to be retaken from Castro. And that was part of the reasoning why Kennedy was assassinated. He wasn't assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald. It was the national security apparatus. So, you know, we go from one thing to the next, and we have to see that it's not so much the president, as I want to say, it's a matter of the pressures necessitated by the capitalist system itself, no matter where it is, because that's what the First and Second World War was all about, the capitalist system. And we might even say the sophistication of capitalism in, with the Civil War that we had in this country. Okay, there's a connection there, because the Civil War we had in this country was over whether they were going to be, they could be more efficient to have to create wealth with industry rather than with slave labor. That was the clash. And the clash, of course, the North outnumbered the South, and they won, you know, they won the war between the North and the South. So what I'm trying to get at is the factor that we think in terms of personalities, where we should be aware of what is the system, the political economy, which is capitalism, that drives this incessant need for wealth, I would say. Because out of this capitalism, we do get slavery. We get what we now call wage slavery. Because if you have people working for less than $15 an hour, and $15 an hour is nothing rich in any sense of the word. But I mean, you know, people should be on average making $35 an hour so that they can live kind of decently. But that doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen because the people who are on top want to keep the people at the bottom at the bottom. And that's what I'm stressing here. It's been an enormous pressure, and people don't realize that poverty is oppression. And it's oppression by the state apparatus. And that's the problem. And we have to try to get people to wake up, to understand the complexity of our situation. Because a lot of people feel, well, I can't do anything about it. But it's a matter of understanding what's happening so that you can come to understand, and then you can take up and realize different tactics and strategies to overcome this. It's not something that's going to be forever. It just can't, because all things do rise and fall. And that's specifically what I have to say in so many words.
You know, there were a few things that happened under President George H.W. Just to rekindle some thoughts.
Good.
If I'm not mistaken, he was the one that was known for some contradictions, like read my lips. I think he was the one, right, that said no tax increase.
Right.
So
right.
He was also known as waffling. Things like that. He also, in his political campaign, was against the so-called Reaganomics, but ended up adopting Reaganomics, which is so famously known to, you know, give money to the rich that money would then flow down to the poor, which never happened, never
exactly
does happen.
Right.
The vast bulk of any income or wealth, when it's given to the wealthy, is retained by the wealthy. And the crumbs, relatively speaking, percentage-wise, is then dribbled to the masses. And that's been a history of economic policy in this country. And so he was also known to be a big part of that. Also, somewhere along the line, I remember being aware that there was a civil rights legislation that he vetoed. I think it was the Civil Rights Bill of 1990. He stated it was a quota bill.
Uh-huh.
And then also he was known to advance the discriminatory, punitive federal war on drugs, which the sax player Clinton doubled down on and ended up being the president over the largest incarceration of African Americans in the history of these United States, and that those numbers still stand to this day.
Right, and you see how that links from one president to the other? Now, Clinton,
and across parties, yes.
Right. Clinton is a Democrat, is a Republican. So if the same thing is happening, you know, in terms of policy, then it's really one party that has two branches.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's one party,
yes,
two branches, because they work continuously, you see, from one to the other. I mean, you know, with Vietnam
true.
And Johnson, you know, there was a lie all about in Johnson. It was a lie about how war started, got hot, I should say, with the with what happened with the destroyer and the junkets. The U.S. said that the junkets had fired on the destroyer when we come to the fact of the Pentagon Papers by, I can't think of the guy's name right now. And that hurts because that's important. Ellsberg? I think it was Ellsberg. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Daniel Ellsberg, right, brought it out in the Pentagon Papers because he worked in with the agency that was writing up this stratagem for how they were going to take over, you know, have the war in Vietnam because France had failed, and the United States, that goes back, right, that goes back to it goes back to Dr. King, because Dr. King wrote the made the came out in early April of 67, I think, and told people how the United States got involved in Vietnam because the French, the French wanted to give up. The United States said, no, we'll fund you everything you need. And when the French met the North Vietnamese in Dung Phu, I think that was part of the name of the location, the French gave up. And as the French gave up, the United States had to move in. And that started in 65, started up the Vietnam War, and King spilled the beans and told everybody how the United States got into the war. And therefore, what happens to King is that he's assassinated. And he's not, of course, he's not assassinated by the fellow that they said shot him, because the evidence didn't link up with him. I think that's Earl Ray. I think his last name was Ray, I think. And, of course, he was caught and put in jail. But, I mean, you know, he was the guy that they were going to use for putting the blame on so that nobody would realize who really did things. And James Earl Ray was his name, the one that supposedly assassinated King, but he didn't. It was the national security apparatus, the same thing that killed Kennedy and both Kennedys. So, I mean, you know, that's the link up of what goes on. And I just wanted to say and push this, the fact that we can't say that it's really race, because we find through current scientific anthropology that there's only one race, and that's the human race. So, and we go back to its origin, which is in Africa, that was revealed by Louis B. Leakey and Donald Johanson. Both of these anthropologists have unearthed some of the oldest findings of Homo sapien, the species that we are. And everyone comes out of this and goes into different areas of the world and take on their own patterns. But it's really one species. And so, therefore, to me, the critical fight here is what political economy we want to start to have to be beneficial. I'll put it this way, because there's no perfect perfect society, but something more helpful to mankind at this point in our evolution, I will say, would be communism at this point. But I'm not saying that that's the be-all, because I don't know what the be-all could be, because I don't know, you know, how life came about, you know what I mean? So all I know is that it's here, and we have to focus on how we want to treat each other and how we can take steps to better humanity rather than keep it on a suicidal course, because that's where we are on. We are on a course for suicide. Once a president comes out and says he disagrees with climate change and stuff like that, and climate, the way it is, should stay the same way, and he sees all these things happening that haven't been happening before, I mean, there's got to be something wrong with him, and scientists are telling him that there's something wrong and we need to correct it, and he says no. I mean, that's, you know, that's sort of like agreeing with the taking humanity out of the world. That's what I see going on with him, with and many other things about Trump. That's something that's just despicable and, you know, just livid about, that the way his behavior is. So, I mean,
but every president that we've had have done, or from my perspective, and I'm sure many of our listeners' perspective, and probably most of our, you know, country's citizens' perspective, have done some things that are maybe under that term, you know, just horrendous or despicable. But at the end of the day, it's a heck of a responsibility. It's an awesome responsibility to be, as the term goes, the leader of the free world. You know, and that includes our President Trump, and prior to that, Barack Obama, and, you know, prior to him, the Bushes and the Clintons, and of course the senior Bush, and all the rest. So there's a common thread there. I mean, anything away from that awesome responsibility that they have laying on them. But I guess behind the scenes, that you don't see those changes occurring, or, you know, with that don't change over those terms. The military, right? The FBI, CIA, those Those things are there in place, right? And then the corporations, those things don't change. So, you know, I guess the common sensible piece of it is, yeah, these are changes in administrations, but some of the fundamental aspects of this free world that we term free world are non-changeable.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying, Mr. Grinshaw?
I agree with what you're saying, and it's not a free world.
What about
either.
That? What influences do they have? Do we not think about those things, the influences of those businesses that have a legacy of 50 years, not just a 4 or 8 year term, or the CIA or military or leaders?
Right.
That have
That's
an
right.
integral influence on our – no one says anything much about that.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, when Barack Obama took office, this is as an example, you know, there was no – even though he was the first African-American president, there was no African-American agenda.
Of course not. Of course not.
Which carried over from the previous president. That's what I'm getting, in case folks are saying, okay, your point, Daryl. That's
uh-huh.
my point.
Right.
So he carried on that from the previous president.
Exactly.
As you said, and that was from two different parties. And so, as you said, wait a minute. Yeah, let's highlight that point you made, Daryl, about that Civil Rights Act.
Yes.
And about the incarceration, or the war on drugs from
right.
one party to another that was perpetuated.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, our country, going back to point one, George Washington, was founded on slavery. Come on, folks. It's not spoken of enough.
Right. Because how can you have slavery and have a democratic society? It doesn't – it's antithetical. You can't have slaves and have a democratic society. Democracy means rule by the people. That means all the people.
I don't mean to laugh. I'm being cynical.
Hey, it can't be the upper
it's
class.
It's not funny.
Yeah, this is a class society, and you can't have a democracy in a class society. It cannot be two classes to have a democracy. It has to be one class. That's the people who, the working class, that does the work and uses it harmoniously with others. It can't be I'm on top and you're below and I have more privilege than you do. It can't be that way, because it just continues with antagonisms. I mean, you know, First and Second World War, they were fought by capitalist countries vying for each other's goods and belongings. You see? So, I mean, that's the drive, because you can't have enough. You can never have enough, because what you have, you can lose. And that's the, what should I say, the conundrum, or should I say the dialectic? That's another word for it. There's that always going on, and we have to try to, you know, try to make, dissolve the, you know, class society and try to make it, struggle for it to be harmonious with one class. That's the working class, the people that contribute. Because, you know, it's not a matter that some people are better than the others. It's the matter that people have talents. They have talents to do certain things. But the thing about it is that for humans to get on their feet, they had to live together and share things together in order to get on their feet. You see, so it requires harmony with us. It doesn't, and for to be able to break apart leads to more, you know, more devastation than anything else. And that's the plea. I mean, I'd like to make people aware of that there should be no poor people on the face of the earth. because the earth feeds us all. There's enough for everybody to be fed. You see,
why are there poor people and people are starving?
Because there are people who want all the wealth. The wealth is at the top. People who have the ultimate control of this country are multi-trillionaires. Trillionaires. How does that wealth come about? You see, how does some people are trillionaires and others are starving? How does that inequality come about? Because ownership of property. Private ownership of property. That's how it comes about.
But there are those that would say democracy, the nature of democracy is that everyone has an equal chance to become that wealthy person. And if they put the hard work in and the diligence.
That doesn't work. See, that doesn't work. Because, in other words, instead of General Motors being owned by certain people on top, it has to be owned. It has to start off being owned by the government, and the government is supposed to be a product of the people, of the working class, and that what they extract should be shared by everyone. No one should be the trillionaire on top. In other words, the government is the function for the benefit of all the people, not just some, not just the distant, not just the upper class who can dominate and tell the government what to do and what not to do. It has to be concerned with the general wealth of everyone. Everyone has to be shared in. That's democracy. If you don't have that, you really don't win. We're not living in a democracy. By going to the polls and voting, it's not really giving us democracy. Why did they have the Electoral College? The Electoral College was there, put there to maintain the social order of the wealthy being able to control things. And that's what happens over and over again. This is a fascist country. And why do I have to say that? I mean, it's blatant. Here's a man who hasn't committed a crime. His skin is not considered to be white or Caucasian. He gets blown away and the cop walks free. What is that? That's democracy? So, I mean, in other words, there's no such thing as race. That's the cornerstone there. There's no such thing as race. Yes, people look different. That's true. But it's just like, you know, dogs look different, but they all bark. So, I mean, you know, it's that sort of thing. One dog may have the ability to kill another dog, you see what I mean, because of strength. But that's something individually that's given. But it doesn't mean that it has to be used to the detriment. It has to be shared by helping each others. And with someone who's stronger can do a little more, lift more or something like that. But we all work in harmony. Who does the design of things? And he brings it together. You see what I mean? So it's, a house is built with an electrician as well as a plumber. But the electrician and the plumber are all necessary to get the house built. And, you know, and the carpenter. You see, you need all of these units, but they create something that's useful, but they should all be living and sharing alike.
So, Ron, what happens here? Because there's many perspectives on where the wealth of this country and the world resides, and it's not in 100,000 people. I mean, it's in a relatively speaking, a few people's hands, the real wealth of the planet, right?
Exactly.
Now there are those who are billionaires, you know, that some people say, well, wait a minute, now you're going to get into tens of thousands. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the multi trillionaires, the ones who really run things.
Right.
But that said, and them having influence on many aspects of this society that we live in on a global scale,
right.
Is there any realistic perspective that this will change? I mean, is there any realistic perspective that, as you say, a real democracy will exist where all people can have an equal opportunity? Because right now they say that there's equal opportunity in America like no other place on the planet.
That's not true.
And that is just statistically not true. It statistically is not true.
Right,
Until African Americans get their 40 acres and a mule, you won't even be close to getting there. And
right.
So with the way things are changing now, I mean, our total demographics in America are changing. I mean,
yes.
You know, it's changing quickly, and I'm not giving a perspective on my opinion of that one way or the other. I'm just sticking to the facts of the matter.
That's
good. That demographic in America is rapidly changing, and so we are now, you know, the minority in this country. That demographic has changed in the last just few decades.
Right.
What's to say that there is that opportunity for someone's of any influence to be able to say, we need to make this right. Because now these other demographics, they have their platform. And it's being,
yes.
There's so many. I mean, we can go gay, lesbian. We can go Latino. We can go very many different perspectives that
right.
now have their
right.
positions that have leapfrogged above African Americans significantly. And I think that was one of the roles of Obama, to make sure that was okay. And that happened smoothly, because he clearly had no agenda. In fact, he pushed the gay and lesbian agenda. And I'm not bashing Latino or gay and lesbian. I'm just saying that they leaped frog the needs of those who built this country.
Yes.
And that's
I'd like to be a little delicate about this.
I know you would.
Yeah.
No one wants to talk about it.
Right. No. Delicate because of the fact that we have to realize that humanity is a mixture of various types of people. That's the way humanity is, and we can't just say that we have to. Let's say, in other words, what I really want to say is that my position is that we have to get rid of the idea that we have to have reparations. You see, and the reason I say that is because reparations is really only feeding back into the capitalist system. We need to get rid of the capitalist system. We don't have if you're getting rid of the capitalist system, you're not going to have people trying to get into this country because of the situations in their own countries. Because see, the reason that people are trying to get into this country is because this country is designated as being very wealthy. But this country also is predicated on people being very poor. You see, so you're bringing people in because they feel that this country, they'll be better off. Well, I guess to some extent, they'll be better off than where they've come from. But they've come from the situation that this country has created for them. You see what I mean? This country has created the situations of why they're coming here. We have to get rid of the system of capitalism so that they won't even have to come here. You see what I mean? And I'm not trying to say they shouldn't come in here. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, if we can get rid of capitalism, we won't have this idea that people can have to be poor somewhere else. There'll be no poverty because people will be sharing. That's what we need. We need the society to change its political economy. That's the driving question here. It's not a matter.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, well,
I don't
disagree
with you that there should be an equality of resources. I don't think that would stop the influx.
Right.
I don't think that because wherever this would end up, even in a panacea, if it were just to be within these continental United States of equality, where there was a sharing of wealth, I think you would still have a draw because of the deficit that exists on some of our border countries, especially our southern border countries. I think they would still flood here. And I'm not, as you, trying to say that you know, we shouldn't be compassionate of our neighbors.
They wouldn't have blood here if it wasn't.
There is a significant amount of wealth that is flooding into those countries, and yet there are a number of people that are still leaving. A significant number of manufacturing have gone into those countries, and so you still have people flooding here. That's a matter of criminal activity that's pushing a lot of that's happening.
But don't you see,
so when I say 40 acres.
Capitalism itself is criminal. You follow me?
Well, that's true. I don't
right.
doubt that. But, you know, there's many types of criminal activity. You know, there's white-collar crime and blue-collar crime, if you will. I mean, there's shooting someone in the head, and then there's taking money out of somebody's pocketbook.
Yeah.
You know, both of which are crimes, but I would distinguish the two.
Yes, yes. So, you know, that's where we are. It's not a matter that, you know, the United States is the one that has seen to it that they have fascist governments in South America. You see what I mean? Anytime a left-wing or Marxist-thinking leadership wants to move its head forward, they come down and try to get rid of it. That's what we're talking about with the Sandinistas. What has happened to that was Nicaragua, then there's other countries like now Chile. Chile and then we have also, I think, Brazil. Brazil is going back to fascism. And Venezuela, the United States wants to take over Venezuela because they have a socialist leadership. I mean, you have to see what is driving this. See what I mean? It's not.
No, I understand that. Yes, that is one of the key problems. In fact, that's an interesting dichotomy that's taking place that's driving a lot of the immigration. I see the immigration that's taking place, and it's not even just immigration, but I'm saying the flooding of the borders, because immigration I kind of look at as a legal basis. But I see a lot of that as systemic of the issues, the problems that are occurring in those countries, which I believe
from?
At a governmental level could have some good influence on, but does not. In other words, we're not trying to treat the problem, you know, the root cause.
No,
you know, we're
of course
dealing
not.
With the symptoms of these people, and when I say these people, these humans, these desperate humans, you know, seeking asylum. We're looking at that as the problem, but the problem really is, why are they leaving?
Right.
That's the problem, because it is causing an extra burden on our limited resources here. Let's be very clear about that. I hope anyone would not. I mean, America the Great, who wouldn't want to necessarily come here?
Well, see, that I would hold in question also, because of the fact that you have to realize how many trillionaires do we have here? They don't need all that money. You see what I mean?
Well,
so
that's true.
I can't say that it would be something that's going to be really detrimental to this country if that was that clique of trillionaires was exposed and then had to give up their wealth. You see what I mean? So I'm not making a mathematical conclusion, but I'm saying that it is the political economy of capitalism that is the 800-pound demon in the room. And that is what we have to get rid of, because it's not the people who are coming here. It's because you know of NAFTA and CAFTA. That and Trump
yep.
has just reorganized
yep.
NAFTA. You see what I mean? And then when Jamaica had, let's see, what was his name? Shucks, I always forget these names. Manning. Was it Manning?
Yeah.
Not sure it was Manning.
Right.
They had to get rid of him. And because Manley, that's what it was, Michael Manley, he was a socialist. And I think it was the Hollywood actor that became president. I should know him because he was a Hollywood actor.
Reagan,
right. The Caribbean Basin Initiative. That was what he was doing. He was proposing that to undermine Michael Manley and get him out of Jamaica. He was successful also, you see, because a lot of people that are in the upper crust want to maintain that because they see that that's the way life should be, because they're well off. Life should be that way. You see what I mean? Have rich, be rich. And that's, you know, no one has to be poor, though. See what I mean? No one has to be poor, and if you don't have poverty, you don't have enormous wealth hooked up in some one spot. Everybody shares, and, you know, we get along. We don't have to have all this hostility, because, see,
I understand.
Yeah, if you're coming up as a capitalist, like the thing going on with the United States and China and the tariffs that they've put in place now. The United States has put, Trump has put in place. I shouldn't say Trump, I should say the United States, because, see, Trump is the mouthpiece for the ruling elites. See, we never see
very,
who the ruling elites are.
It's very
but
true.
Presidents are selected, they're not elected. That's important
That's right.
for people to understand.
That's right. He's just representative of the political machine.
Right.
Yeah, I understand that. I still stand that that the issues dealing that and I'm not trying to segment in any racist way, but the issues that African Americans have found themselves burdened with is beginning to get lost in this social political environment that is evolving. And I understand the aspect of let's share the wealth, but the only concern I have with that is that a rising tide raises all boats. But the point that I'm making is that you have a integrated group of individuals here, people here, who were brought here not of their own will. There aren't, we didn't race to get here. So if you go all the way back to what's happening in our society and you look at the prison population, it was systematically no different than the Tuskegee experiment created to where it is now. And that those resources that Obama refused for one reason or another, you know, there are those that would say, well, if he did, he may have lost his life or his family's life. For whatever reason, I'm not saying it wasn't even justified. Maybe it was. But I'm saying the fact of the matter is that he refused to address has now created a situation that is catastrophic and it has to be dealt with. But it's getting lost, I'm saying. It's getting lost within all of the other
You're right. It's being
lost. All of the other issues that various groups are bringing to the table.
Yes.
And I'm saying that is something that I'm not going to sit down on, and I never will. I never ever will. And I agree with you on those fronts where you speak of this issue of this nation having an imbalance of power and wealth that if balanced will resolve a lot of these issues. But I'm saying it won't address the embedded issues in this particular community. And there are some other communities as well. I'm just speaking of the African-American community. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist in other communities. For example, because I don't know those issues as well. The Native Indian community. I mean, there are others. There are poor whites that are struggling. But I'm just saying from the perspective that I know it needs to be addressed. And until individuals and groups begin to speak on it on a broad scale, there's no hope for our children. And that's what I'm referring to. I have to address it from that perspective because that's the society we live in. That's why I said, is there a chance that this will change? And I'm not saying it's every man for themselves because we have to think about our fellow man and woman.
Right.
But I have to speak up on behalf of the African-American plight. I have to. I don't need to be here if I'm not. That's
I'm not trying to.
As I fight that battle. And it's not in contrast with anything that
I'm not
said.
Trying to dismiss the American problem. Because I'm an African American, so to speak. I'm not trying to do that. What I'm trying to say is that it's one race. See what I mean?
I agree with you.
It's one race, and we have to address it from that aspect. And we have to. And if we're going to get a society that is that has one class, then that's what has to happen. We have to forget the race thing because it's really a myth. You see what I mean? It's really a myth, and we cannot undo what has been done. We can only go forward and try to improve. You see what I mean? That's why I said reparations. It would only feed more into capitalism. And there still would be an upper crust, let's say there would be a better upper crust blacks, and still be dire poor blacks, even with that. You see what I mean? Because that's the way capitalism is shifted. People will still, who have a little more, will be able to have much more, rather than to share the whole thing with everyone. You see what I mean? That you can't get out of in a capitalist system. So what is the major thing we have to get rid of is the capitalist system itself. Because that's the demon. And I struggle for that. It's not that I don't think that black people should be, you know, allowed to have pleasure and allowed to have, an equal life or anything like that. we have to go and drop the system, because you see how Germany and the United States had wars with each other. And, you know, that was supposed to be whites killing each other like cats and dogs. You see what I mean? So we have to see that we're not dealing with race. We're really dealing with a political economy of capitalism. And we're not going to get rid of capitalism by having reparations. That only feeds into capitalism. And
I understand your point.
That's my point.
Yeah, when I say reparations, I'm just saying that there has to be resources to address this situation. I think if we gave reparations, frankly, there were people that would kill themselves with the influx. They wouldn't know what to do. They wouldn't know possibly how to handle it. But it, how do you manage that? This is not something that I think is just very simple solution. It's relatively complicated, is doable if there were to have those that are in power to in any way have to share what they have.
Right. Okay. Think of this: who is still in power when the reparations are handed out? Who has still the power? Because see, I'll hand you $1 million or $1 billion. And as soon as I give it to you, I'll tell my officials, now money that has value has to be red. The money I just gave you was green. Now I change this situation, and wealth becomes with those who have red money and not with those who have the green money.
Exactly, and that's why I'm saying we don't want to give the fish, we want to teach how to fish. We don't want to deal with the symptom, we want to deal with the problem. And now, with that said, I'm referring to specifically in the African-American community. We want to deal not with the symptom, but with the problem that's causing the symptom, and that's going to require resources, whether it's red, green, yellow, or blue. Those resources have to be applied. That's what has to happen. And those resources can be referred to as reparations.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. All right. I give to that. I give to that.
That's what I see is going on. We are on the same page.
Yeah.
I love it when you're on, Ron. Let's not let another month go by before we come back and speak truth to what's going on around us. I hope we've enlightened some minds tonight to at least be considerate of what we've discussed this evening. The lines have been open, that 347-838-9142. If there was something that occurred to any of our listeners that they were hesitant to speak on for whatever reason, fear or shyness or whatever, it didn't come to them, and they would like to bring that to the airways for Mr. Crenshaw in my next discourse, which will be coming up.
Okay.
Please send me an email, and I'll make sure that I share it with Mr. Crenshaw, and we'll make sure we bring that up as part of the subject matter or discussion the next time that we have this discourse. Send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, _CLA18@msn.com, and let me know your thoughts, your opinions. If you want it to be anonymous, that's fine too. And we will certainly have that, because this discourse is important for us. If anything at all is going to happen, it has to happen in mass. So we need your thoughts. You wouldn't be listening now if you didn't have them. So please share them so Mr. Crenshaw and I can bring it to the airwaves.
Mr. Crenshaw, thank you.
I so appreciate it when you're on. It's always good, always enlightening, always empowering.
We
love you for that. You keep on doing what you're doing, Mr. Crenshaw. You keep on doing. I encourage you to do that.
Yes.
And to our listeners, we thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. I guess the theme that we talked about this evening was being aware being aware. Just be aware of the influences that are coming at you. As Mr. Crenshaw said, you know, you have two branches of the same system. It's basically what we're looking at here. And so keep that in mind as you're making your decisions and as you and your family are going through the holidays and your precious dollars are being spent. Think about 10 to 12 commercials on a commercial break, programming information into your mind.
Right.
Think about those things. There's no coincidences. You must protect yourself and your loved ones. Remember what they say on the airplanes. When that oxygen mask drops, you have to take it to yourself first so that you can then protect those around you who you care about. And so with that said, until the next time, be at peace, be well, take time out for you. Just if it's 5 minutes a day and just get still, that's when the answers come to you. That's when the enlightenment happens, when you can clear your mind of the clutter that you're being flooded with for the other 90% of the day. That includes your sleeping time even. And with that, I pray all is well with you and yours. Tell someone you love that you love them, and do keep in touch. Until the next time, peace and blessings. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.